the optimal life.
So, Dr. Darnielle, can somebody have a successful business if they don't believe in God?
Yeah. Yeah, they can. I just believe that businesses with a spiritual foundation go farther faster. So we are born, especially here in the United States, we're born into families where lack and chaos, regardless of how much money you make, inhibits and inhabits who we are and how we grow and how we're raised. I can't remember where I heard it said the first time, but there's no such thing as a family that is functional. Every family has dysfunction. And being able to navigate the dysfunction that you're born into, I believe is easier when you hold the belief that something greater than yourself made all of this possible to happen. Now, it's quite possible also where I say God, you can choose to say universe or source or any of those other things. What I believe is inherently what makes the difference is recognizing that you alone don't control what happens in the world, right? And we can only focus on what it is that we can control, and there's so much we can't. But believing in someone, for me, it's God, that's greater than yourself. It's grounding, and it gives you the level of support that creates safety for your nervous system so that you can show up fully in the way that you must in order to operate as an entrepreneur, small business owner, right? Like, we could argue that if entrepreneurship was easy, everybody would be doing it and the statistics wouldn't be as abysmal as they are. Mm-hmm. So there's clearly something to it, right? When I think about the fact that there's 33 million small businesses in the United States and roughly 88% of them are not generating six figures in gross receipts a year. And the strategies, like all of the marketing that's been around since before social media. So many people think social media is marketing. I mean, that's probably a whole nother episode. But before all of the other things that were happening before, all of the strategies that are tried and true that still work to this day, if it were just about strategy, wouldn't we all be making lots of money? There's clearly something else at play. Mindset, the 6 inches in between our ears. I say often, until you work on the 6 inches in between your ears, you will not feel seven figures or eight figures or nine figures in between your fingers. And this right here is governed by the beliefs that we were born into and the beliefs that we hold. And unless we learn how to shift and change those patterns, those beliefs will stop us and derail us from what we are to experience. And so for me, it is important to understand that Darnielle Antoinette, that's my government name, in and of my own strength, there's a lot that I can do, but there's also this amazing gift of recognizing that I don't have to be the creator of all things, although I was created in the image and likeness of the ultimate creator.
Mm. Very interesting. Have you worked with clients that don't have that spiritual connection?
Yeah, I've worked with atheists.
You've worked with atheists?
Yeah.
So what's the biggest difference that you see in an atheist? How do they handle adversity versus someone that's totally God-fearing?
What they blame it on, for lack of a better way to describe it, is slightly different. But one of the things that has helped me to work with people, regardless of their own faith system, and because for me, it's not even just about religion. Like, the Bible is not a religious book. It's a book that was written that is used in religion. Totally different. Again, maybe a whole nother conversation. But what I focus on are the principles, the governing principles that any person who works these principles will experience the benefit of the principle, right? And for the simplicity of it, we can assume, or we could call a principle a formula. 1 + 1 = 2, right? So if you do this and this, you will get this. That's how I govern and work with people who don't necessarily have my faith. That doesn't stop me from referencing the Bible, because it's a book just like Think and Grow Rich or Move to Millions, the book I wrote. And I use those principles that are in it to help any person who wants to operate inside of the principles experience the result. And so when I'm working with an atheist, I am, of course, sensitive to how they believe. I don't coach my beliefs on anyone, which is why I can say, you know, you can say God or source or universe. Now, there are some people who would want to put me on a cross and crucify me for even making that statement. But, you know, this is the way that I choose to live my life. And I'm fully confident and comfortable. Even the Bible says, let every man be fully persuaded in his own mind. And so what I know is when I look at the undercurrent of the principles that are set up and established, it creates an environment for the creators that we were born to be, right? Genesis 1 and 26 is when God says, let us make man in our image and likeness. Imagination, creativity being the highest form of expression and value that exists on the planet. That's who we are. That's who we were created to be. And whether you believe in God or not, it doesn't negate the fact that that's who you are and what you were created to be. And so because I don't have a heaven or a hell to put anyone in, I don't sit in the seat of judgment for what someone's individual beliefs are. I like to use the principles to show them how they work. And what often happens, Nate, is as a result of that, they start to consider something greater than themselves.
That makes sense. That makes sense over the course of time. Especially as we mature and go through different adversities. But do you notice, I'm curious, do you notice that still something different in these folks at the early stages? Do they lack a resilience? Maybe they don't care as much. Maybe they, you know, what do you see?
It's not a lack of resilience. It's a lack of belief that something outside of themselves is responsible for what they have.
So they're bearing
the brunt of everything. They're holding the pressure and the stress and the anxiety and the overwhelm because they don't believe that there's anybody else that gets to play a part in the equation. And so it's a very heavy weighted place to be.
I'm following this.
Yeah.
So they're carrying the weight of the world because this is all me.
Yeah.
This is all I. There's no other outside force. There's no other factors involved. I'm going to win. I'm going to lose. And it's going to all be on my shoulders.
It's all on me.
And you say folks that use the spiritual approach, your approach, the God girl approach, the God man approach, whatever it is. Those folks say, I'm going to carry a burden. But there's something else at play here as well that's carrying along with me.
Well, I think that God guys and God girls, we instead say that we don't have to carry a burden. Like we recognize that and to an extent, you know, this is where religion may start to enter in. I always describe my faith system as I subscribe to the doctrines of Christianity, right? And that makes people look at me crazy. But what I mean by that is I believe in Jesus. I don't believe in religion because religion is man-made and it's a separator. I believe that God desires that we all get to experience the abundance. And there is no, if you wear this or you do that, you are in and you are out. Like that's not the way that it was intended, right? There is universality in the principles that are established. And I believe that those of us who are faith-centered recognize that there is power and strength in who we are and that we don't have to bear the brunt of the struggles of the world because we understand the significance of the life, crucifixion, and resurrection of Jesus Christ. And so as a result of that, there is a natural release that happens and not like a scapegoat, like I'm not Catholic, right? And although Christianity is rooted in Catholicism, there are things that happen inside of Catholicism that I don't necessarily subscribe to. And I think that there is appreciation. That's the word that's popping in. I think that there is an appreciation for recognizing the source of all that is good and great, having connection and alignment with God and the Holy Spirit and allowing those guiding forces to participate in your life experience. I get to wake up every single day. Now, I probably technically experience what everybody else is experiencing. I got bills, you know, I got doubts, I have fears, I have all of that. But none of those things envelop me in such a way that I can't get up and do what I know I need to do. Like, I have this innate sense of surrender to just let it go. Like, I speak it out. I put it out there. I put it in my journal and I get it out of my being so that I can go forth and do what I need to do, recognizing that because of who I am and because of the way that I choose to live my life, inherently, there are some things that I just don't have to ever concern myself with.
That's powerful. So it's a let go, let God mentality.
Yeah. It's surrender. Like, surrender, if you ask me, you know, in business, in life, is the most important strategy you could ever leverage. Even if you figure out, even if you reverse engineer how to make $1 million in your business, selling your whatever for whatever, even if you do that, the element of detaching from the outcome that you just mapped and allowing for God and his abundant universe to bring you what you decided you wanted, however he decides. The Bible says his ways are higher than your ways. So even though we are creators, we can't possibly fathom every possible way to achieve a specific result. We're limited. Our viewpoints are limited. So being open to something greater than us, working with us, in us, through us, to help us to accomplish the big goals and dreams that we have, not because we made them up on our own, but because they were placed inside of us since before we were formed, and just allowing for the manifestation of it is powerful. And it is, it's like, even as I recount it, Nate, it sounds mystical. It's like, what is she talking about?
Yep.
And that's the power of belief, right? If I went to sit down in this chair or you in that chair, I don't question if the chair is going to hold me. I believe it. If I go out to start my car, I don't question if my car is going to start. I believe it's going to start. I don't question if I put my foot on the brakes, are the brakes going to stop my car? It's the same element of faith. It just is. And we get to decide. That's the power. We get to decide. And if you don't decide, it doesn't mean that, at least according to Darnielle, it doesn't mean that you're damned to hell. You're probably going to experience more than you have to because you've chosen a harder route to go. But you can also change your mind at whichever point you decide.
Yeah. And that's where you come in a lot with the mindset stuff, mm-hmm. which I would assume Dr. Darnielle wasn't always this confident in this approach. So the folks that, even the ones that do believe in God and the ones that are spiritually connected, but do feel that burden and they start taking it in and they're clogged up and they're dealing with all the different things, the bills, the chaos, the kids, the life stresses, everything. It's not just business. There's life. Life's involved.
No, life. Yeah, absolutely. So there are a lot of believers who are not experiencing the full abundance of God. I mean, again, that could be a whole nother conversation for a whole nother day, but I see it all the time.
Hey, so Darnielle, you've already given us 3 other episodes that we're going to have to do now.
I know. And I'm excited. I'm coming back. I mean,
that's right.
Cause you're like right out the gate. I'm like, okay, they did not come to play. I love it. So like, let me just back into my story a little bit. Cause I think it'll be helpful. Right here specifically. So, you know, I was born to drug addicted turned crack addicted parents, 1975. Crack wasn't here yet, but in 1989, when it got here, they went for it. And so I saw a lot of chaos, right? As the saying goes, we didn't have a pot to piss in or a window to throw it out of. And I remember my mom went to jail when I was 8 and we went to live with my father. And my father, a fully functional addict, he never lost a job. He never hit rock bottom. Fully functional. It's amazing when I think about the power that he possessed to control his life and to be addicted to a substance that he couldn't control.
Addicted to
amazing.
Crack. Addicted to crack. Fully functional.
Addicted to crack. Crack cocaine. Yeah. Smoking crack. Every weekend. Like, he would literally leave the house on Friday and we'd see him again on Monday. And I learned as I got older that he literally was binge getting high all weekend. We were left with my stepmother.
And let me just ask you, Darnielle, let me just interject mm-hmm. here. When he would come back on Monday, would he stay away from the crack throughout the week until the weekend
yes.
again? He would
yes.
stay off of it.
Yeah.
Just to keep you guys, because you have responsibilities. Wow.
I had my father passed away, but I had so much respect for the man that he was for a myriad of reasons. Number one, he could have been like so many fathers out there who don't take ownership when something happens to the mom, right? He didn't. So he chose to take us in. I'm sure we quote unquote ruined his life. We stopped his fun and all of that, but he handled his responsibility and handled it like a man.
Your mother went to prison for the crack?
She went to prison for drug dealing.
Okay.
Yeah, she got high on her own supply, I guess. I don't know. Like
right.
But and so anyway, all of that is happening, and the one staple in my life as I was growing up was church. Now, I will be honest and I will admit to you that I was a fair weather Christian. I literally went to church on Sunday, Bible study occasionally on a Tuesday or a Thursday. Like, I was the girl who literally would come into Bible study and they would be like, everyone turn to Genesis. And I'd be like, because I didn't know, right?
You're saying, what's Genesis?
Right. Where is that? And they're like, yeah, that's the first book in the Bible. But I went to church because that's what you do, right? How many things are you doing today? Those of you who are listening, you don't even know why you're doing them, but you're doing them because you saw them done, right? Often when I'm on stage of speaking, I tell the story about the little girl who's watching her mom make a ham. Mom cleans the ham, cuts the butt off the ham, puts it in the pan, puts it in the oven. Little girl says, Mom, why'd you cut the butt off the ham? Mom says, I don't know why. Ask grandma, because that's what grandma did. So little girl calls grandma. Grandma, hey, mom's making a ham. She just cut the butt off the ham and put it in the oven. Why'd she do that? Grandma says, I don't know why your mom did it. I did it because my pan wasn't big enough. So many of us are navigating life doing things we saw done by those who raised us without any inclination or even desire to ask why. And so that was me in church. Well, I was 23 years old. I was engaged to be married the very first time. And my first ex-fiance, 3 months before our wedding, confessed that he had gotten an older woman in our church pregnant. And the bottom literally fell out of my life. And the pastor of the church didn't seem to think it was a problem. And so personally, at that point in time, I began to question this religious stupor that I had been in, because I just went along to get along. Sunday, we went to church. That's just what you did. And you spent all day there. Like, it was what you did. You didn't ask any questions. That was it. I started, Nate, in my 20s, even just before this happened, to question if Christians are the chosen people, and if we were created in the image and likeness of God with the power to do everything that he can do. The Bible says in the New Testament, greater works will you do. If we as Christians have that power, then why are we on the altar every Sunday for the same issue? Why are we not experiencing deliverance? Why are we not living in abundance? Why are we living paycheck to paycheck? Why are we robbing Peter to pay Paul? Why do we believe you have to work hard for money? I started to question this in my 20s because it just didn't make sense to me anymore. And so it was during that period of my life, I studied all religions. I read all the books. And what I learned was that absent from the names of some of the prophets, it was all pretty much the same. And I drew a conclusion. And the conclusion I drew is the conclusion upon which I work today. And those are the principles. The principles are the same. And if you understand the principles, then you will experience the principled reward. And so that was like the beginning of me recognizing, again, and for myself, I do believe in Jesus. But I'm not passing a collection plate. I'm not doing a call to Christian discipleship. I'm not above it. But that is not what I'm doing. I'm focusing on the principles, because we got to meet people where they are. And lots of people like me have experienced church hurt. And so they don't want anything to do with Christianity, because the people, the lay people in the church, did something that was outside of what should have been done that caused them trauma. And so I recognized, as I leaned into my gift and the anointing on my life, that it was more important for me to teach the principles than it was to ride any wave from that standpoint. And there, you know, there are some people who will have their thoughts and their feelings about that, and that's okay. Sure. I, you know, the Bible says, let every man be fully convinced in his own mind.
Well, I just want to ask a couple things here.
Yeah, absolutely.
The hurt and betrayal that you felt at 23 years old, 90 days before your wedding, had to be something so unbelievably painful that you couldn't even fathom what had just occurred. Okay.
So you have no idea. You have no idea. Like it was, it's something that I wouldn't wish on my worst enemy, as they say. It was horrible. I was embarrassed. I was humiliated. My worth was in question. I don't want to say I didn't want to live because I would never give anybody the power to over me that way. But I was I was at my lowest.
You didn't want to be seen. We'll say
I didn't want to be seen. I was so embarrassed. It was so humiliating. Like, why am I not lovable enough that this is my reality? Right. And, you know, at 23, as a woman, all you want is to be married. Like, I mean, I was at that point where all my friends were getting married and it was like, oh, it's my turn, you know, all of that. And I'm grateful to this day. I'm so grateful that I did not marry that fool. I believe I dodged a bullet, but in the moment.
Sounds like you did.
Yeah. In the moment, I was flabbergasted. I could not believe that it had happened to me. And it had happened to me under the quote unquote watchful eye of the church.
Right.
And that was what made me question everything. I was like, what is this Christianity thing?
Well, that's what I'm getting to also, because that, as painful as that is, then you have this pastor who's supposed to be the spiritual leader of your congregation, your church.
Correct. You know?
And it sounds like you alluded to the fact that he seemed to think it was okay, I think is what you said.
Yeah, he didn't make them, they were trustees together. He didn't make them not be trustees. Like, he didn't strip them of anything. I never got a call or an apology. And this was like a big deal in the church. It's not like it happened outside of church and no one knew about it and I just didn't come anymore. Like, he literally told me, we had finished our premarital counseling. So the whole time we were in premarital counseling, he was, you know, having his way. She was about to start showing. So it was like a joke. People knew already and I didn't know. Like, in hindsight, I remember people like looking at me and whispering when I would come to church. Like, she is oblivious. Oof. She has no clue.
Well, let me just add. So, you know, my question is if it wasn't, if the pastor had reacted differently, as you would hope a pastor would, and shunned him and said, this is terrible, and got rid of the trustee status, actually handled it the way that you would have expected. Mm-hmm. Do you believe you would have still been a Christian as of today?
Well, I still consider myself a Christian.
You know what I mean. When it comes to
right.
the Christianity.
I would. That's a good question. I know I would not have been in that church. Like, I left the church. Like, I was like, this is not my place. And I did not go to church when I left. I still was ritualistic. I still was doing what I knew to do, right? I just joined another church. I actually went back to my own previous church because I had joined his church because we were getting married and blah, blah, blah. And I never left God. If anything, Nate, this brought me closer to God. This made me no longer operate on the relationship that my grandparents and my Aunt Ida, who was the one who took us to church the most, I was no longer riding their relationship. I was beginning to develop my own. And what I recognized very early after, or as I worked through the hurt and the betrayal, is that this was not God. God didn't do this. Man did it. I think that we often, when we don't understand, we want to blame it on God, right? God, how did you let this happen, right? Well, if I'm being honest, there are some things that I did that let it happen. It wasn't God. It was me. It was some of the decisions that I made, right?
There is free will. We still have free will.
Exactly, right. And so as I recognize that, the grace of God is to let me to make my own decision. And to let me decide how I'm going to live my life. And the salvation of God is to, when it got to a point where he couldn't take it anymore, he created a distraction, a disruption that would prevent me to no longer turn a blind eye to it because he loved me so much. Now, in the immediate, I didn't see it that way. I saw that something was wrong with me. But as I began to deepen my connection and relationship and alignment with the Father, I realized that I had experienced His grace and I had experienced salvation, and He had saved me from something that would have potentially prevented us from having this conversation today, Nate.
No doubt about it. No doubt. Well, yeah. Number one, He saved you from 10 years later having 2-3 kids and then something like that happening.
Right.
Holy cow. That's a whole different set of ball game that you'd be playing.
Absolutely.
But I got to tell you, Darnielle, I think that that pastor had an impact on you, maybe even more so than you've ever thought about. I think that if he may have pushed you away a little bit. You might not have been, you're still a Christian, like you said, but mm-hmm. you might not have been exploring other religions and have some of these unique takes.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know what I mean? And it was the sum total of all the things, right? That was like, as the saying goes, that was the straw that broke the camel's back. Mm. Right. Because it's one thing for the one doing the dirt to think that there's nothing wrong with it. Right. For the girl to or the woman to feel like she won some amazing prize. I mean, he wasn't a prize. She probably knows that now. But on top of that,
yeah,
for him to do that, it was
you felt too betrayed. You felt too betrayed. Oh, you were betrayed by your lover, and you were betrayed by the church because of the pastor's reaction.
Yeah.
And you were just like, holy shit, what is happening?
There's got to be more to life than this is what I recall saying to myself, or at least that sentiment being expressed.
No doubt.
And as a result of that, I was like, you know, I have to know for myself, for Darnielle Antoinette, what does this all mean? Because right now I'm cleaning the ham, cutting the butt off the ham, putting the hand in the pan and putting it in the oven. And I don't know why.
Right.
So if I'm going to go to church, if I'm going to commit to being in relationship with God, it has to be because I see it as the best and obvious choice for me and not because someone else said I should.
Mm.
And I'm grateful. I'm grateful. I mean, it's why I'm bold and unapologetic about my faith. And it's why I ask the questions and make the statements that disrupt the patterns to at least get people to consider the feasibility that there might be another way.
You mentioned the principles. Back to the principles before.
Yeah.
So give us at a high level, take us through, if you would. You got these universal truths. What are they?
Wow. There are a lot, right? So the one that just popped in most readily for me right now is it's out of Mark 11, starting at verse 20. So I'll just tell the story. So Jesus and the disciples are walking to Bethany. Jesus sees a fig tree. He wants some fig. He goes over to the tree. The tree is not producing. He curses the tree. They keep walking. The next day they're walking back and the disciples cannot believe that the tree actually died. And Jesus sees this as a teachable moment. And he tells the disciples, he gives them what I believe, I call it the $1 million winning formula. He gives them the formula to how to get any mountain in your life to move, any mountain. He says, if you believe, don't doubt, speak, and forgive, you can tell any mountain to move. So what does that look like in business? Believe that you deserve a $1 million company. Don't doubt that you have what it takes to create a $1 million company. Speak over yourself as often as you possibly can about your $1 million company and how you'll act, how you'll feel as you walk into that. And then forgive yourself and anyone else who comes along your path that could potentially derail your ability to have what it is that you desire. Mm. That's one. I mean, there, like I said, there's a million of them. And we have all of the universal laws that are also in the Bible. We have the law of sowing and reaping, right? Whatever you put out there is what you're going to get back. It may not come back from who you put it out there to. That's Galatians 6:9. Do not be deceived, for God is not mocked, for a man will reap what he sows, right? We have the law of polarity. You can't have up without having down. You can't have hot without having cold. All of these universal laws. We have, you know, Christians get their panties in a bunch about the law of attraction, but guess what? It's in the Bible. You know what I mean? Like we have ask, believe, receive, which is out of Matthew 7:7, which is the premise of the law of attraction, right? So everything that really governs how we move, we can find roots to it in the word. Like if you took time, if you start in Genesis, like the power of creation, the value system, identity, surrender, alignment, all of the buzzwords that you hear in the marketplace today, they have their roots in the book of Genesis. Like, so out the gate, these things, these concepts, these premises, these precepts, these principles were designed and offer instruction of how to navigate those things that happen. And we also see everything happening inside of the Bible. There isn't anything new.
It's incredible. It's incredible how you could relate it to almost everything and probably everything in today's day. What's a common struggle or roadblock or a problem that a lot of your clients have, and how do you help them overcome? Is there something general that comes to mind?
Yeah, I think one of the biggest things that we see across the board, regardless of, you know, where they are in their business, when they come to us, we see a lot of issues around deserve level. And that stems by and large by how they were raised. And most of these people were raised Christian.
You're saying they feel they're undeserving. They feel that they don't deserve this amount.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know why? Often, because let me not make it about any of my clients. Let me make it about my experience in the church as I was growing up. I was literally, Nate, taught to pray, "I am not worthy." I was taught to pray that. That's a whole problem because, and again, this is the version of Darnell, and I believe that this to be true about many of the clients that come in that have an issue with it. I run this experiment periodically when I go places to speak, and I say, you know, especially when I know I'm speaking to a room of faith-filled people, and I'll say, how many of you would say that your relationship with God on a scale from 1 to 10 is at least a 7? You know, 85-90% of the hands will go up. And then I'll say, on that same scale, how many of you would say that you are confident of at least a 7? Almost every hand will go down. How can that be? Because religion as a practice is taught to create fear and separation as a practice. Now, this is not an absolute. There are exceptions to every rule. Now, we can also add in that in my culture, you know, we were enslaved here and we were allowed, fingers in the air quotes, to have religion, but the religion that we were allowed to have made it acceptable for us to be slaves. And we were beat in fear and subjected and subdued into that being what God intended for us. So the history, especially of people who look like me, and by and large today, my clients are, you know, predominantly men and women of color. All of that is that's what's playing on the tapes inside of our mind, right? I remember my dad. Now, my dad was, as I already said, a fully functioning addict. He had a good job by all accounts. He worked for General Motors. He made about $50,000, $60,000 a year, which at that point in time was a lot, you know, was a lot of money. We would have been considered middle class, except for he had a habit that made us really more poverty stricken. All of his extra money went through his habit.
His weekends were expensive.
Right? And my dad would say, at least twice a week, Nate, at least twice a week, we have to work twice as hard to have half as much. And that's just the way it is. So imagine being me, young, gifted, and Black, who had been ingrained in me from yay high to a grasshopper, that's just the way it was. I took my first job in corporate America right out of college, making $19,071 a year. I didn't know that I had the power to negotiate because my dad told me that I should just be happy for what I get. The person sitting next to me made $24,000. The person sitting next to her made $29,000. We all did the same exact job.
Yeah, same thing.
Yeah, same job. I didn't know it was my right. And so I don't believe that many of my clients consciously don't think they deserve it. I think if you asked them, they would all say, I know I deserve it. But subconsciously, and we know your subconscious mind takes everything you present to it as if it's the truth and it's winning. Subconsciously, they don't believe they deserve it.
How do you recognize that?
Them to get to a certain point.
How do you recognize that, Darnell? Because they're going to say,
the way they speak. The things they say. So for instance, I'm thinking about one client in particular. When I first started working with her, she was charging $25 an hour. And her $25 an hour, she said, and I quote, oh, but that's more than I make in corporate America. In corporate, I only make $20 an hour. So I thought I was getting ahead. But the problem that she was solving for people out as evidence, not theory, evidence by the results she was getting for her clients, was easily thousands of dollars, like easily. But so she thought
her justifying it by comparing it to a lesser value triggered to you saying this woman doesn't feel worthy.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not worthy or I don't deserve enough. Yeah.
I can't charge that much. Well, why can't you? Right now on the road, there are Kias driving next to Hondas, driving next to Toyotas, driving next to BMWs, driving next to Maseratis, driving next to Bentleys. Mm. You can, and people will pay you more than you think when you can solve a problem they've been unsuccessful at solving on their own. But people will pay you in accordance to what you deem your service to be worth. And most people, my clients included, often when they walk through the doors, are associating their worth and value with the money that they exchange. So if I'm undercharging, it's because I don't believe that I'm worth it. Even though it's not, you know, money is it's a measuring stick. It's a tool. It's not a measuring stick. It's a tool. It has nothing to do with your work. If it is true, and I believe that it is, that God says you were created in his image and likeness, we're not talking about your worth. You're a creator. That is the highest form of value that exists in the universe. But because I was taught that money is this and there's never enough on it and it doesn't grow on a tree out back and I should just be grateful to get what I can get, I'm going to assign a value that is way less than the true value associated with the problem I'm going to solve, and I'm going to like it. And how dare I be high-minded enough? I mean, I've literally had that. Now, as a woman, in addition to being a Black woman, I remember my dad saying all the time, Darnell, Antoinette, I see you, but I shouldn't hear you. So I also have a lot of women clients who are afraid to speak up about their gifts and their talents because they were taught that they should be seen and not heard. And talking about yourself is boastful, right? And as one of my good friends, Sherry Riley, says, it's not humility, you're hiding. Because they're afraid of being squashed. Because when they were exuberant and vibrant and expressed themselves, they were punished. And so now there are adults who need to market. And they're deathly afraid to market because doing so would mean that they're showing off. And they used to get beatings as a child when they did that.
I got to tell you, you have a plethora of mindset, limited mindset beliefs that you have to deal with a lot of your clients. I mean, that's you've listed a lot. A lot of limiting beliefs, breaking the generational chain.
Yeah. And I see it even with my clients who aren't Black, just for the record. And mindset, if you ask me, is 95% of your success. Skill is only 5%. Once I get you out of here, I can teach you. I can give you the strategy that'll make you millions of dollars. But if you don't believe you can execute the strategy and achieve the result, you not executing the strategy. It doesn't matter how good the strategy is. So we do spend the predominant amount of our time at the onset working on mindset. And there are layers and levels to it. And I see this across the board. Men clients.
I'm sorry. That's gotta be so rewarding for you, Darnell, when you see a client that has a major breakthrough,
absolutely,
major breakthrough in mindset, and then you see them flourishing and it all's clicking. Everything's there. I am worthy. I am deserving. I'm making more money. I'm connected to God more than I've ever been. I don't need to carry the burden. When it's all aligned, that's got to be a powerful thing for you.
It is amazing, Nate. It's the optimal life. I've been waiting for an opportunity
that
to
was
say
good.
That.
Perfectly
It
stated.
is really amazing, and it is really powerful, and I love it, and I wouldn't have it any other way. And it's interesting because when I started my business and I started coaching and consulting, I didn't want to do mindset. I just wanted to teach the strategy. I'm a brilliant strategist. I literally can give you a $1 million strategy that will work in like 10 minutes. I love strategy. But what I was finding is that my clients at every level were struggling with the strategy. And so I had to start peeling back the layers. And then that's when I learned that it was all this mindset stuff that we had to do, that we had to do that first. We had to do it often, like every day. Just like you wash your behind, you have got to wash your mind. And if you don't, they'll both stink, right? Yeah. And it's, yeah.
Yeah, no doubt about it. No doubt. Beautiful stuff. We're getting close here. Darnielle, Dr. Darnielle Jervy Harmon, she called herself Darnielle Antoinette several times. So we know the real name there. Founder of Incredible One Enterprises. We linked that up in the show notes. Talk to us briefly about Move to Millions. You've got the podcast and the book. We'll link both. Tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah. So Move to Millions is my mission from God. It is a soul cry to return entrepreneurs and small business owners to their abundant birthright. I believe that entrepreneurship is the vehicle that was created to transfer wealth. And I love helping people connect business acumen in a way that really shifts the trajectory of every area of their life. And so we created the Move to Millions method, which, as you stated, I have the podcast, I have the book. We also have a live event that we do every May. And the Move to Millions method is comprised of 7 pillars around business that really helps an entrepreneur, small business owner understand what it's going to take in order to build a business that serves them financially and spiritually so that they truly get to become the CEO. And so the 7 pillars are strategy, sales infrastructure, systems, support, success mindset, spirituality, and self-care. And so within those 7 pillars, we're looking at what we call the pillars of business optimization. So mindset, messaging, marketing, sales, operations, talent, leadership, and legacy. And so we're looking at the full scope and spectrum of a business. We start by doing a very detailed assessment to identify the gaps that exist. And then based on those gaps, we custom curate a roadmap that'll get your business to the $1 million mark. Typically within 1 to 3 years, we have some businesses, some clients that come in and within a year or less, they're over the $1 million mark and they have a business they can sustain without having to hustle and grind. And then others, their foundation is not nearly as strong. So it takes us a little bit longer for them to be able to get there. And we use this methodology with our service-based business clients. So it would work with retail product-based businesses. We've just made a choice not to work with retail product-based businesses because there's only so much you can charge for your widget. You can't charge $10,000 for it. So it just makes it challenging. But a service that offers a result that your client has been unsuccessful at solving on their own, you can charge big dollars for it. And so we teach our clients how to develop the right strategy, how to increase their sales and bring leverage into them so that they stop selling one-to-one and start selling one-to-many. In putting a infrastructure around the system, standard operating procedures and automations that are going to allow them to work less, and then build out a lean team. So you don't need a lot of people, but the right people in the seats on the buses that allows you to strategically preside over your business instead of working in it so that you truly do get to become the CEO. And always working on that mindset, because it is true at every level, there's a new devil. I was with a client last week at our Legacy Collective Retreat, which is our program for businesses that are already doing 7 figures. She's done 7 figures already in the first quarter of this year. And we were still working through deserve level and wanting to hide.
Yeah,
because she wants to take her business to 5 million. She'd done $1 million the last 3 years in a row. And she's like, I'm ready to go to the next level. But we still had to deal with what's in the way and what has kept her playing smaller than she was intended to play. So at every level, there is a new devil, and we are really good at getting in there and dismantling those beliefs radically and setting up a paradigm shift that will take them to the next level and supporting them through the whole process.
Beautiful stuff. We've linked you up in the show notes, guys. Dr. Darnielle, if you want to learn more, check out the website, the book, the podcast, and you could find ways to connect with Darnielle. Last question for you. What would your father say to you today if he was here?
He would be excited. So 2 years ago, July the 3rd, he got rushed to the emergency room. He never came home. 33 days after being sent there, he passed. We learned on day 4 that he had stage 4 liver cancer, and it was inoperable. It was unto death. And so I spent 27 days at his bedside. I was there every moment. We got to have a lot of really great conversations while we were still communicative, and we got to forgive each other. Mm. And the book, Move to Millions, which I finished that book because he needed it to get into the world. It's the book I was born to write. It is part memoir and part methodology. It is the process that myself and 45 of our clients in the last few years have leveraged in order to scale to and sustain million-dollar companies. And I know he is extremely proud of me because he was like, you got to get that book done. The world needs that book.
And so I'm grateful. Just to end it off, I would imagine forgiveness is something you can find all throughout the Bible.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Hey,
thank you so much, Darnielle. This was great.
Thanks for having me.